fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is Dan Friedel in for VOA's Sunny Young. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. We now know the answer to what everyone has been waiting for over the last 30 days. With an overtime 2-1 win over England on Wednesday, Croatia advanced to its first World Cup final, where it will face France, who defeated Belgium earlier this week. France is looking for its first championship since it won the title on home soil in 1998. The third-place game on Saturday features Belgium and England. The decisive goal on Wednesday came from Mario Mandzukic, the striker who plays for Juventus during the club season. Mandzukic scored the biggest goal of his career for an exhausted Croatian team late in the second extra period. Kieran Trippier opened the scoring in the first half for England with a free kick, and Ivan Perisic, who set up Mandzukic's goal, scored the equalizer in the second half. To help us put the final matchup in perspective, we're joined by Chuck Culpepper, who has been in Russia reporting on the tournament for the Washington Post. Chuck, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. Thank you.
So here we are. We're finally at the culmination of the month-long World Cup. We have the two finalists figured out in France and Croatia. One of the smallest countries in the tournament makes it to the finals this year.
Yes, and the smallest since Uruguay in 1950. So that's a different era, you know. So it's really something that this has come about, really an accomplishment on their part.
So one thing I wanted to ask you about is the significance of the tournament 20 years ago when the French team with Didier Deschamps on the field instead of the manager won the championship. Croatia also did well in that year's tournament. Let's take a look at the French team first. Tell me about what's different this year with the French team compared to the recent past, and how has Deschamps influenced this team to make them adaptable to playing against different styles of competition in this year's tournament?
Yeah, I think the first thing you go with is that they do seem to be feeding off of this loss that they had to Portugal in the Euro 2016 final in Paris. And this seems to be a real, you know, sticking point for them. I think it hurt a lot. You know, it was at home. They were the favorite. And I think that fueled them in a way that failure can, only maybe only failure can. And they have this 19-year-old marvel, Kylian Mbappe, who's probably been the biggest breakthrough star of this tournament. Well, he has been the biggest breakthrough star of this tournament. Just breathtaking player. And his emergence as someone who was not born until December of 98, so was not living during the big French celebrations of July that year. His emergence has been one of the leading stories of this whole 5-week event. So I would say that's another dynamic of it that's made it, you know, that made them so compelling. And then when you factor in Deschamps, the manager, the former defensive midfielder for France, and I think the fans were, and maybe the journalists from some that I've talked to were not too, did not find his way too scintillating, but I think their sturdiness in the back and their sturdiness on defense has made them bigger believers in him than maybe they were at the outset.
Let's move on to Croatia. Certainly, they have some outstanding players who are well-known in Europe, but it's a small country. Luka Modric, well-known player, talked yesterday after the overtime win against England of surpassing the team from 20 years ago. And just wanted to ask you about the significance of the history and how Croatia is fitting into the country's place in its soccer timeline.
And if you it's an extraordinary achievement, you know, one that mingles with geopolitics, which makes it extraordinary, and this in many other cases. You know, we're talking about a country which declared its independence on October the 8th, 1991. It's going on 27 years old in that regard, and was going on 7 years old when it reached the last four in France in 1998. So these are really, with two different generations, you know, these are really quite some achievements for a small country in an event that seems to always, until this year, lean and tilt toward those big teams of Brazil, Argentina, the Germany, Italy, the multiple winners, you know, and they've elbowed their way in there twice now and gotten, you know, to the rare parts of this knockout draw. So I just think you have to look at it as one of the biggest sporting achievements ever already, regardless of whether they can win it or not. The amount of just moxie they've shown in trailing in all these matches, all three knockout matches, and yet coming back to win, I give them a maybe not an above 50-50 shot, but pretty close to 50-50 shot.
So looking at the atmosphere surrounding the final coming up on Sunday, do you have a sense of what the breakdown is inside the stadium as far as the support for these two teams? Obviously, we're going to have a lot of world soccer fans in attendance. We should have Russian soccer fans who bought tickets for this match way back when the tickets became available. And, you know, certainly there probably are fans of countries like Brazil and Argentina who decided to stay in Russia for the entirety of the tournament, even though their teams got knocked out. What do you think the breakdown is going to be in the stadium on Sunday?
Well, I agree. All of what you said is true. I think all those factors, and I'm kind of foreseeing a tepid crowd, similar to the one we got for France and Belgium, where I was there. We're talking about two sides that don't have large followings and have not had large followings here. One of them, Croatia, is because there just aren't that many Croatians, you know, 4.2 million. So not many to draw from to begin with, even though the ones who it's a very fervent soccer country, you'd say. It's very engaged, very interested. And then you have France, which has not traveled has not had a big traveling contingent here. I saw them play Peru. They were decidedly outnumbered in the fans that match. I saw them play Argentina. They were even more outnumbered in the fans that match. That was knockout round. They made a little sliver of the stadium, pretty much a boisterous one, but still a little sliver of the stadium. So I'm seeing this as a really neutral kind of setting, lukewarm, not passionate the way it would be if you had all the Brazilians or all the Mexicans or all the Colombians or all the Peruvians, all of whom made sort of astonishing stadium spectacles, especially say the Colombians and the Mexicans, you know, people from Latin America who brought the bulk of the passion to here, to matching Russia's. That's where the noise has been with those far off countries. And so I'm not seeing this as a final where you have any element of that in the stadium. And I think if it had been France, England, maybe then you would have a lot of English fans and you would have more partisan noise. But I'm seeing a lot of nonpartisanship in that stadium Sunday night.
We're joined by Chuck Culpepper from The Washington Post. Chuck, I'll let you go on this. I wanted to get a sense from you about your experience in Russia outside of the stadiums and the media rooms and your hotel rooms. What's the life been like for you in Russia during this last 30 days or so? How has the tourism been for you if you've had a chance to get away from work at all and see some sights?
it has been a World Cup of great distance. You know, the distances are large, as there's going to be in 2026 when it's in North America, you know, and as it's not going to be next time when it's in a tiny country, Qatar. You know, so it's been a great distance. Today I took my 18th flight. Lots of flights. I had, you know, people have been on trains for, and they'll tell you about it, 15 hours, 20 hours. In one case, a Peruvian fan was telling me, you know, 35 hours on the train and to get from here to there. So it's been, you know, things are far apart. Then I think everybody has commented on how the Russian people, they've gotten a better sense of them. They've found a lot more warmth than maybe they expected. This has been one of those cases that really shows the value of travel and learning another culture. I think people have loved this World Cup. It's a drinking, partying culture late in the hours. I think people have enjoyed that. And it also makes me wonder about what's going to become of the next one coming up in 2022. And I think, you know, people have just gotten a greater sense of the country. I've been on 4 cab rides of 4 hours or more. The long cab rides are sort of representative of the distance, and they kind of enabled me to see the countryside, which is quite beautiful in a lot of places. The cities of especially Kazan and St. Petersburg are stunning, so beautiful, and it's kind of baffles me why people don't talk more about St. Petersburg when they talk about the most beautiful cities in the world, because it is up there.
Thanks, Chuck. That's Chuck Culpepper from The Washington Post. He joined us from a train station in Moscow ahead of Sunday's World Cup final featuring France and Croatia. I'm Dan Friedel, in for Sonny Young here in Washington, D.C., and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. For more from Russia, we're joined by Samson O'Malley, who has some perspective on the just-completed semifinals and a look ahead to Sunday's finals.
Sporty greetings to you, Dan. The finals of the 2018 World Cup will take place on Sunday, July the 15th, and it will be France versus Croatia who will battle it out to claim the most coveted prize in world football. Thousands and thousands of English fans arrived in Moscow within a span of 48 hours from London to cheer their lovely team in the semi-final clash on Wednesday. The Luzhniki Stadium was packed full and expectations were high, and then this happened.
So though did Perisic. Mandžukić! Croatia hit the front. Mario Mandžukić pounced. And England are hurt. And Croatia, for the first time ever, will play in a World Cup final.
Croatia came from behind on Wednesday to beat England 2-1 as Mario Mandžukić's extra time goal sent them into the first World Cup final and a possible revenge mission against France. England's bid to reach a first World Cup final since 1966 came to an agonizing end as they lost in extra time at the Luzhniki Stadium in Moscow. Juventus striker Mario Mandžukić scored the winning goal in the 109th minute of the semi-final, slotting in from Ivan Perisic's flick on into the area. Croatia thus became the 13th team to contest the final and the first new finalist since Spain in 2010. Jubilant Croatian fans honked their car horns and let off fireworks after the team's victory.
It means so much to us. We are so excited. It's amazing. It's history.
We knew we were winning.
We are gracious.
We are gracious, man. Come on.
No, we're winning this!
Just
World Cup!
That's maybe 4 times, but Croatia is really nice!
For England fans, it was a disappointing night.
I am very disappointed with the result. I thought we played really well, and then I thought, well, I don't think we deserve to lose, but then again, we have. And then you've got to give credit to Croatia, because they kept on coming.
I thought we were all over him in the first half, but I don't know. We were destined not to win.
Gareth Southgate is the England manager.
Very, very difficult situation to be in, you know, for all of the players and all of the staff. We, as a team, have made incredible progress and probably got to a stage where, you know, if you'd said to us before the tournament we'd get to a semi-final, we'd probably have thought that was beyond where we thought. But when we were here, we really believed we could go another stage, and certainly in the first half, I think we played extremely well.
The Three Lions captain, Harry Kane, couldn't hide his pain over England's loss.
We worked so hard. It's been such a good campaign for us so far. We wanted to go all the way, and we felt we was good enough to go all the way. It just wasn't our night tonight. Small margins decide big games, and unfortunately for us, it didn't go our way today.
Spectators at Wednesday's World Cup semi-final in the Russian capital booed and whistled Croatian defender Domagoj Vidar, who had spoken out in support of Russia's neighbour and adversary Ukraine after Croatia's quarter-final victory over Russia. A video was posted online showing Vidar, a former player with Ukrainian club side Dynamo Kiev, saying, "Glory." And after 29 days of competition, 62 matches played with two remaining, Hurricane leads the top scorer's chart with 6 goals. He's closely followed by Romelu Lukaku of Belgium with 4 goals. Denis Chesterev of Russia also has 4 goals to his credit and occupies the third position. 161 goals have been scored so far, 213 yellow cards issued, 4 red cards has been shown to 4 players, while 47,902 passes have been completed. And FIFA has fined England 70,000 Swiss franc, and Uruguay were given a 50,000 Swiss franc sanction for breaking media and marketing rules during the World Cup. FIFA ordered that the Football Association had previously been asked to desist from such act. From the Luzhniki Stadium here in Moscow, I am Samson Omale.
Thank you, Samson. Let's move on to another big tournament, this time on the grass of Wimbledon in London, England. We talked yesterday about South Africa's Kevin Anderson knocking off Roger Federer to advance to the Wimbledon men's semifinals. Joining us now with more on the men's draw is VOA's Gwen Ooten.
Sporty greetings, Dan. On Wednesday, a BBC Africa reporter tweeted this. In case you missed it, South African Kevin Anderson provides the shock of 2018 at Wimbledon so far by beating defending champion Roger Federer. In what was arguably the biggest win of his career, Kevin Anderson saved a match point in the third set and fought back in an astonishing defeat against the 8-time champion, 2-6, 6-7, 7-5, 6-4, 13-11. And after his win, Anderson said it took him a set to settle down.
The first set obviously wasn't great for me. I was a little bit unsettled starting the match out. I thought I settled down much better in the second set. I felt I played a much, much better set of tennis. And, you know, obviously in the third set, I just tried to compete as hard as I could. Obviously had that one match point, but played a good point and was able to get that break. And I feel like once I did that, I really settled down well and felt, you know, pretty comfortable out there.
The marathon match lasted nearly 4.5 hours. And Anderson said the key to his win was remaining calm.
You know, it felt great to, you know, get that match. I mean, I think the toughest thing players face when going out playing somebody like Roger in this setting is giving yourself a chance. And I feel like often I've, you know, the times that I've played him before, I haven't really allowed myself to play. The first set was an example of that. So, you know, I was really proud of myself the way I was able to relax and, you know, play my game.
And a little bit of confidence didn't hurt.
I think I've started to believe in myself a lot more. Coming into this event definitely felt just a more quiet confidence of, you know, going further in it than, you know, maybe I had in the past. And obviously with matches like today, that definitely assists that process too.
Anderson said although he has every reason to celebrate, he needs to stay focused on his next match.
It's definitely a win that means a lot to me today. You know, it's tough in the sense that, you know, now I've got to get ready for my next match. So, you know, I can't dwell on it for too long. Obviously, there's a lot of emotions going on. So, you know, you try to come down as quickly as possible. I've already started my recovery process because, as I said in the beginning of the tournament, getting through to the quarters was a big goal of mine, but also putting myself in these positions where, you know, hopefully I'll be able to get, you know, another step forward and be playing on Sunday.
Anderson is the first South African to reach the semifinal round at Wimbledon since 1983. He will next face American John Isner on Friday. This year's Wimbledon has been a tournament full of upsets. And after his match against Anderson, Roger Federer was no doubt still feeling the shock from his loss. Federer told reporters Anderson point blank had a stronger game.
As the match wore on, I just couldn't surprise him anymore. And that was a bad feeling to have, but okay, it's not like it's never happened before, you know. I've been in many, many matches like this, and these are the, you know, the moments where you like try to hold your serve and create opportunities, and maybe he's got to miss a few more than make a few more, and that's going to maybe make the difference. And I couldn't come up with enough good stuff for him to miss more, and I think that was the key at the end.
But Federer said although it may take some time for him to get over the defeat, don't count him out yet.
I don't know how long it's going to take me. It might take me, you know, a while. It might take me half an hour. I have no idea what it's going to be. Yeah, of course, the goal is to come here back here next year, you know. I wouldn't call it unfinished business, you know. I feel like I did a good business here in the past already. So I'm all right, you know.
It was also a slippery slope for Spain's Rafael Nadal in his match against Argentina's Juan Martín del Potro. After winning the first set, Nadal dropped the next two sets, and it began to look like another stunning upset was on the horizon. But Nadal prevailed, taking the fourth and fifth sets to claim victory in another marathon match that lasted 4 hours, 48 minutes. Nadal will next face Serbian Novak Djokovic, who enters the semifinals for the eighth time of his career. Djokovic defeated Japan's Kei Nishikori 6-3, 3-6, 6-2, 6-2. Afterwards, Djoko said, while the match was tough, he's been pleased with his level of playing.
I'm really not thinking about, you know, being an underdog or being a favorite. I just try to build the momentum, and obviously I've been very pleased with the way I've played so far in a grass court season. And today I had a tough opponent and a, you know, big challenge. I think we were quite even to the middle of the third set, and then I managed to you know, step up and, you know, play up a gear and really end up this match really well.
Djokovic played on center court for his quarterfinal match, and with Federer's elimination, Djoko will play there again in the semifinals, and he says that can only help his game.
You know, I was glad and grateful that I was scheduled today on the center court and playing a first match. That helps knowing what time you get out on the court. I'm going to play semifinals back there again. I've played, you know, this year so far only once in first four matches in center court, and it does help. I mean, obviously, as you progress in the tournament. So I'm pleased I'll be staying there right now.
Novak Djokovic and Rafael Nadal face off on Friday. And American John Isner has reached his first Grand Slam semifinal following his win over Canadian Milos Raonic 6-7, 6-4, 6-4, 6-3. Isner has never gone beyond the third round at Wimbledon in 9 previous attempts. And after Wednesday's match, Isner described the feeling of finally reaching the semis as pure elation.
Very, very happy to be in this position right now in the semifinals, and how I'm feeling physically and mentally. I'm in a very good spot, and I think I can keep doing damage here. So this is amazing. It's by far the best Grand Slam I've ever played in my career, and I've been playing for 11 years. So I'm super happy, and to do it here at Wimbledon makes it even a little bit more special.
And Isner says playing against Kevin Anderson instead of Roger Federer has not changed his focus.
Whether it was Kevin or Roger, that didn't enter my mind at all, which I think is very good. But look, I mean, it's not like I have a huge opportunity now. I mean, look how well Kevin is playing. It's going to be extra tough.
John Isner and Kevin Anderson played the opening match of the semifinal round on Friday. And that is all from me. Dan, back over to you.
That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Ooten. And that wraps up the July 12th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to VOA producer Bill Workinger and VOA engineer Wojtech Zorniak. Thanks also to Sonny Young for having me in. I'm Dan Friedel, in for Sonny Young in Washington. Sonny will be back tomorrow, so make sure to tune in. That's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Over the past 5 years, the Feed the Future Nigeria Livelihoods Project has helped pull some of the most vulnerable families in Nigeria out of poverty. This U.S. government foreign assistance program has helped Nigerians improve agricultural production, income generation, nutrition, and sanitation. The $22.6 million program in Nigeria began in 2013 and concluded just last month. Administered by the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, and implemented by Catholic Relief Services, the program initially helped 42,000 poor households in Abuja, Nigeria's capital, Kebbi, and Sokoto states to increase agricultural production, diversify incomes, and improve nutrition. It also provided livelihoods planning skills, adult literacy and numeracy instruction, and cash transfers to the most vulnerable households. In 2017, the program expanded to Adamawa, Borno, and Yobe states, reaching 10,000 more households. This project took a holistic approach to agriculture, to livelihoods, and to social development, said USAID Mission Director Stephen Hagen. It addressed the needs of the extreme poor by improving incomes and reducing vulnerabilities, and in this way serving as a model for efforts to build resilience in rural Nigeria. The USAID program introduced new technology, improving agricultural production and access to input markets such as quality seeds for smallholder farmers. As a result, crop yields doubled for more than 33,000 farmers. The program also helped farmers to reduce post-harvest losses. The activity engaged poor households in the rural economy by providing business skills and financial literacy support, vocational trainings and lending schemes, and safe spaces for adolescent girls. Additionally, more than 2,000 community workers were trained to deliver over 1.5 million counseling and group sessions on nutrition that led to a 22% drop in stunting, 10% drop in wasting, and 53% increase in exclusive breastfeeding rates in targeted locations. A cash transfer component alone helped lift 2,740 households out of poverty. State and local governments have shown positive support towards sustaining the gains from the program. The U.S. is proud to work with its partner Nigeria to improve the lives of the Nigerian people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com. The news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.